Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Me? Can you hear me on the phone?
Thank you. I've got you coming out of every orifice.
I'm really not, you're breaking up quite badly.
Hello and welcome to The Lock-In, where I finally get to talk to people I want to hear from in a place I want to be, the pub.
For some reason, this bloody thing has started playing back some rubbish.
Oh, right.
Where were we? I forgot.
I have too.
We're locked in today with Toby Young, who is the founder and general secretary of something called the Free Speech Union. What is the Free Speech Union?
So it's a mass membership, non-partisan, public interest body that stands up for the interests of its members, the speech rights of its members, and campaigns for free speech more widely.
And how many members have you got?
We've got about 8,200.
It's not many, is it?
Well, we only started in February of last year, and we haven't had any sort of marketing budget. We don't even have a membership secretary, so it's not bad. And they're paying, on average, about £50 a head. So that gives us enough annual income to employ about 10 people. We don't have any external offices, very low overheads. We get about 50 cases a week, 50 cries for help, and about half of those are people we think we can actually help. We've established a sister organisation in New Zealand, and we're in the process of establishing a US free speech union as well, which will launch in the autumn. We also publish briefings, FAQs, policy papers. And we organise events as well. So we have, at the moment, they're all online, but we organise fairly regular online events. So I've got a two-header with me and Professor Kathleen Stock coming up in a couple of weeks to discuss the difficulties that gender-critical feminists are having in their confrontation with trans activists.
I can't understand why such an organisation is necessary.
Well, it's necessary because free speech, I think, has never been in greater peril than at any time since the Second World War.
But you can say what you like here, can't you?
No. did you not? So, I mean, just to pick, the papers have cases of free speech being breached on an almost daily basis. So this week we learnt, for instance, that an artist whose work was on sale in the gift shop at the Royal Academy has been cancelled because she once said something that various trans activists took offence at. We also learnt, Jeremy, I think yesterday, that the Oxford University Students' Union is going to elect a consultancy, those are their words, of sensitivity readers. And henceforth, journalists for student publications at Oxford will have to submit their work for vetting by this group of morality cops. So it won't be the editor's final say as to what goes in Charwell, for instance. It'll be up to this consultancy of sensitivity readers. We had an article in The Spectator, I think, yesterday by Tom Devine, the historian, about the crisis of free speech at Edinburgh University. There was recently a survey carried out by the UCU, the largest academic trade union in the UK, which found that the free speech rights of academics are less well protected in the UK than at any other country in Europe, bar one. Something like 35% of academics at British universities said that they routinely had to self-censor for fear of being persecuted for saying what they really think. There have been surveys carried out by Policy Exchange, by Servation, all documenting the extent of the free speech crisis, the extent to which people are self-censoring. Scotland has just passed a hate crime act, which means that there's now less free speech in Scotland than at any other country in Europe, including Hungary. The Law Commission of England and Wales has proposed that we pass a very similar bill here. There's an equivalent bill wending its way through the parliamentary process, the legislative process in Northern Ireland. The assaults on free speech, Jeremy, are happening on a daily basis, and very few organisations are actually standing up for free speech, particularly the speech rights of ordinary people. And as I say, we're getting about 50 cries for help a week by ordinary people who are being punished simply for saying what they think, either in universities, in the workplace, on social media, etc.
But hate crime, to encourage someone to attack someone because they're black or because you don't like their position on gender issues, is pathetic, isn't it? It's illegal, apart from anything else.
Well, it's not illegal to... It is illegal to stir up racial hatred. And it's... And it is illegal to stir up hatred against people who possess one of, I think, five protected characteristics. But hate speech is defined much, much more broadly than that, and weaponized by, for the most part, people on the left to shut down anyone they simply disagree with. I'll give you an example. One of the people we've gone to bat for is a feminist called Posy Parker. And someone on change.org, the petition website, started a petition saying they wanted the Oxford English Dictionary to change its definition of woman from adult human female to something less trans-exclusionary. Posy Parker started a rival petition on change.org in which she said she wanted the OED to keep its definition of woman as adult human female. Now, various trans activists complained, accused Posy Parker of hate speech, by which they meant defining a woman as an adult human female is hate speech. And change.org, which is the largest petition website in the world, took down Posy's petition because they agreed, and they sent her a letter explaining why they'd taken it down, and they said, we won't support petitions which traffic in hate speech. So what they meant by that was defining a woman as an adult human female is hate speech. So, you know, it's all very well to say...
Well, it's not very friendly towards people who change gender.
Well, so you agree, do you, Jeremy, that defining a woman as an adult human female is hate speech, and anyone trafficking in that sort of...
No, I don't agree with it, but I defend their right to say it.
Yeah, but the Change.org wasn't defending Posy Parker's right to say it. It was essentially taking down her petition by misdescribing what she'd said as hate speech. And we saw this with the attempt to shut down GB News last week. So a left-wing lobby group called Stop Funding Hate whipped up outrage mobs on social media to petition companies advertising on GB News on the grounds that GB News was trafficking in hate speech and was a racist, transphobic, homophobic, far-right, Fox News-like organisation, all of which is completely untrue. But if you do define hate speech very, very broadly, you can weaponize people's natural distaste for what they imagine hate speech is in order to shut down the free speech of your political opponents. You wouldn't support that, would you?
Aren't you helping the people with a phobia about transvestites and transsexuals?
No, I don't think we are. I think that the reason the militant trans lobby and the organisations which have been promoting that point of view, like Stonewall, I think have lost the argument about the reform of the Gender Recognition Act and the reform proposed to make it easier for trans people to change their gender. The reason they lost that argument is because they wouldn't enter into a grown-up, respectful debate about the issues involved in the public square. Instead, they just said, we're right, anyone who disagrees with us is a transphobe, and if you say anything opposing the reform of the Gender Recognition Act, then you're engaging in hate speech. They tried to shame and shut down their opponents instead of actually entering into a proper public debate with them, and for that reason, they've lost the argument. I think that if you want to promote trans rights, even as militantly as some of these trans activists do, the way to do that is to enter into a respectful, grown-up public debate. That's how the campaign for gay marriage succeeded, because they didn't seek to shame and smear and demonize their opponents as homophobes. They entered into a respectful public debate and they won the argument. So I think actually, by trying to create a space for more civil discourse, by trying to discourage organizations like Stonewall from shaming and smearing their opponents and encouraging them to be a bit more grown up in the way they go about trying to promote their agenda, we're actually being helpful, not unhelpful, to the trans community.
If I was to say there is something inherently inferior about black people, would you defend my right to say it?
I think it would depend on where you said it. I think it would be difficult to defend your saying something like that. And if you were a member of the Free Speech Union and you said something like that, I think we'd have to look carefully at whether what you'd said breached our statement of values, in which we say that anyone who tries to shut down their opponents by engaging in harassment or intimidation or bullying, and we would include blatantly racist statements in that category, we wouldn't want as a member.
So there are some things that you would censor.
Yeah, I think we wouldn't support people who were trying to shut down the free speech of others by trying to intimidate them or harass them or bully them. I don't think we wouldn't say that if you don't engage in respectful, grown-up debate, we would exclude you, because I think that would exclude satirists and comedians who sometimes do ridicule and lampoon their opponents, and that's fine. But if you actually tried to shut down your opponent by trying to demonize them on the basis of the color of their skin or their sexuality, then I think we would look very carefully at whether you should be a member of the organization.
But free speech is free speech, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I don't think that someone who says black people are inferior to white people, I don't think they should be prosecuted unless it's in the context of trying to stir up racial hatred against black people. But nonetheless, I don't think that an organisation like ours has an obligation to defend their right to say that in the public square or defend them from opposition on Twitter or Facebook. And I don't think we go to bat for them if a private organisation like Facebook or Twitter tried to kick them off its platform if they said something like that. But I would stop short of saying they should be prosecuted for saying something like that unless it was quite extreme was designed to stir up racial hatred.
Do you find it difficult to walk this line?
Sometimes it can be quite difficult, yes. I mean, I think where it becomes quite tricky is we have said that if one of our members is mobbed on social media, so if an outrage mob comes for them on Twitter, say, and they find themselves being bombarded with very hostile, unpleasant messages, we would go to bat for them. We would come to their defence if we can. Sometimes it's quite hard to tell the difference between when it's bullying, when it's designed to intimidate people into silence, and when it's just a lot of people responding in a similar way to something provocative someone said. I think that's quite a fine line, and it's quite hard to sometimes to figure out whether someone is actually being mobbed on a social media platform in a way which we would think is unacceptable, and when it's just people engaging in a robust democratic debate and just a lot of people saying the same thing simultaneously.
How on earth has it come about that you can think it necessary to set up an organisation like yours?
I think it was, two things prompted me to do it. Do you mean what events in my life prompted me to do it, or do you mean sort of...
What's happened to our society that somebody like you decides to set up a free speech union?
Well, I think it's a combination, I think, of a series of quite bruising personal experiences and an awareness of a growing problem, a growing intellectual intolerance, not just on the left, on the woke left, but predominantly on the woke left. And I think it's something that began in America. I think we saw the emergence of this new, particularly virulent strain of identitarian, hard-left, neo-Marxist politics in America, starting in universities but then spreading more widely. We saw it begin in America and then cross the Atlantic, and we're seeing it now beginning to infect not just our universities but the arts, the charity sectors, museums, galleries. We're seeing it in the media. We're seeing it in politics more generally. And I think it's I think it's been described as the Great Awokening, Jeremy, which is a slightly facetious explanation, but I think it does capture the religious component. And I think it seems to be a resurgence of Puritanism, which has a lot in common with various Christian forms of Puritanism, like the puritanical fever that swept Massachusetts in the 17th century and England before that. There seem to be cycles in which people become possessed by these kind of very seductive moral points of view and become very intolerant of those who dissent from those points of view. Liberalism, exists to fight back against that kind of moral puritanism in part. Unfortunately, a lot of the liberal institutions which have protected people from these sorts of, from being targeted by intolerant religious or quasi-religious mobs in the past, such as the New York Times, some of the great Ivy League universities, organisations that have been set up to defend free speech, they've been falling down on the job. They've been captured by this quasi-religious cult, and they're unwilling to defend people who are targeted by the witchfinder generals within these communities. So I think it's necessary for an organisation like the Free Speech Union to step into vacuum and do its best to defend people's speech rights until these liberal institutions rediscover their purpose and start doing the job themselves. I mean, a good example is trade unions, Jeremy. The academic trade union, the UCU, which I referred to earlier. Trade unions in the 19th century were partly created to defend the speech rights of their members, to ensure that if workers said they wanted higher wages or better working conditions, they weren't sacked by their employers. And if they supported the Labour Party or other political parties that were campaigning on behalf of workers' rights, they weren't sacked. So trade unions, in part, sprung up to defend people's speech rights. But now they're not doing that. Now, if you're accused of transphobic hate speech, i.e. if you say that you don't think trans women are women, or you don't think that trans women should be able to compete against women in the Olympics, someone in a trade union complains about you, the trade union won't stand up for you. The UCU won't defend feminist academics accused of transphobia by trans activists on campus. So it's partly, one of the reasons this union, the Free Speech Union, has to exist is because trade unions are no longer fulfilling that purpose that many of them were originally set up to fulfill.
Oh, for heaven's sake. I mean, you talk about a comparison with Massachusetts in the 17th century, I take it. You're talking about witch burning there. There is nothing like that has happened.
Well, I'm not, well, no one has been killed as a result. Well, not in this country or in America or anywhere in the Anglosphere as a result of something they've said. But I think the impulse, the suspicion of those who offend against sacred values, the desire to expel them, to excommunicate them, get rid of them, and in a very unforgiving, censorious, authoritarian way. That impulse which animated the Salem witch trials, which animated the Cultural Revolution in China in the 1960s, which animated McCarthyism, it's the same ugly side of human societies that we're seeing, I think, this recent incarnation of intellectual intolerance, of hatred of dissent and dissenters, an inability to distinguish between the sin and the sinner, this kind of desire to expel toxins from your community. It feels like the same horrible, ugly human impulse that animated what happened in Salem in the 17th century. It doesn't take the same form. It's a much softer, less brutal form that it takes, but that doesn't mean it doesn't come from the same place.
How come we've got a Conservative government?
I think we've got a Conservative government in part because there is a real disconnect between elites and ordinary people. It's elites, for the most part, who've embraced the woke cult and embraced these censorious speech codes, and have whose commitment to free speech has been seriously eroded in the past 10 years. And ordinary people dislike that. They resent it.
The government says it's having a war on woke.
Yeah, I think that's probably putting it a bit strongly. They haven't been doing a great deal, but I think one of the reasons the Conservatives won an 80-seat majority 2 years ago is partly because the Labour Party has been completely captured by the woke cult, partly because people in red wall seats felt deserted by their party, resent the kind of moral righteousness whereby their social and economic superiors look down at them. I mean, it's one thing to be sneered at for completely snobbish reasons by someone who is above you in the socioeconomic food chain, but to be considered their moral inferior too, I think is too much for a lot of people. And I think that partly fueled the Brexit populist revolt in 2016. It partly fueled the election of Donald Trump in 2016. And I think it partly fueled the Conservatives' success in 2019. I think there has that the elite is becoming more and more estranged from ordinary people. And I think the woke cult has played a big part in that. It hasn't captured ordinary people. It has captured, by and large, the elites. And ordinary people don't like it. They don't like being sneered at and looked down upon for their, you know, their bigotry by, you know, people who are obviously much, much better off than them. It creates grievance and resentment.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What have been your big victories in the Free Speech Union?
Probably are very shortly after we were created in February of last year. Selina Todd, the Oxford Professor of Modern History, was no-platformed by an international feminist conference at Exeter College, Oxford. She was no-platformed the night before. She was contacted by the organisers and told that some of the trans activists on the panel due to speak the following morning had said that they would pull out if Selina Todd was on the same panel as them, because she's a gender critical feminist, a second wave feminist. We complained to Exeter, to the rector of Exeter College, and Exeter College set up a panel of fellows to investigate whether its own free speech policies and the university's free speech policies had been breached, and they concluded that they had, and they've now reviewed their own policies and procedures and set up more robust procedures to ensure something like that doesn't happen again. Shortly after that, we went to bat for Amber Rudd, who again was no-platformed at the last minute by a group of feminists at Oxford, in this case because of her involvement in the Windrush scandal. We complained to the University Proctor's Office and to the Oxford Vice Chancellor, and the society in question was struck off and they were directed to issue an apology to Amber Rudd. We went to bat for a guy called Nick Buckley. He's a Liverpudlian he's a Mancunian who set up a homelessness charity in Manchester, mainly to work with young homeless people. At the height of the BLM protests, he wrote something, a blog post, in which he said he didn't think that the politics of BLM were going to help heal racial divides in the city of Manchester, but on the contrary, by racialising a lot of issues. We're going to make them worse. And for that, someone started a petition on change.org urging the trustees of this charity he'd set up to fire him. He was the CEO of the charity. Instead of telling the signatories of this petition to get knotted, the trustees did fire him. He reached out to us. We found him a charity lawyer. We pushed back. In the end, he was reinstated to that charity, and the trustees who'd fired him resigned. We also helped promote a counter petition which got at least 10 times more signatures than the original petition got. We've had most recently a student at Abertay University in Dundee was placed under investigation by the university for saying in a class on feminism, gender and the law that she thought women had vaginas. This is going back to the supposedly trans-exclusionary definition of women. Various trans activists in that class complained. Instead of dismissing the complaints, the university placed her under a two-month investigation. And we defended her, helped her represent herself, and in the end, those complaints were dismissed. But that's the tip of the iceberg. We get about 50 cries for help a week. We usually end up helping about half of them, and we succeed, I think, in helping people more often than not.
You want to get a life?
Well, it has kept me extraordinarily busy, we are.
Who cares what happens at Exeter University in Oxford, Exeter College in Oxford, or Abertay University? Who cares?
Well, I care, and I think you should care too. If people aren't, if people aren't free to express their sincerely held opinions in these important public debates, you know, there is, I think, a real debate about where to draw the line between, in some areas, between sex-based women's rights and trans rights. They do come into conflict. There's a real issue about whether trans women should have access to women's refuges, for instance, whether they should be accommodated in women's prisons, whether they should be able to compete against women in weightlifting in the Olympics. That issue came up this week. That's a real issue, and we need to have a proper public debate about it, a grown-up conversation. And we can't have that conversation if one side in that debate is constantly at risk of being branded bigots, transphobes, of being accused of trafficking in hate speech. We need to create a more civil arena in which we can have these important debates. We can't just let one side prevail through bullying and harassment and intimidation. It undermines our... If we don't have free speech, if people aren't free to articulate their points of view, aren't free to set out their stall in these important public conversations, it undermines the very fabric of our democracy. So I think it is critical. It's really important. Nothing else is more important.
But supposing I say a woman is a creature, a human being with a vagina, what's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong with that. What would be wrong is that if you did say that publicly, you would... let's suppose you still work for Newsnight and you said that in a column in a newspaper. In all likelihood, Newsnight would be petitioned by tens of thousands of woke activists, trans activists and their allies. You'd be denounced by Owen Jones in The Guardian.
Who cares?
The BBC would care, and you might well lose your job. Why do you think Jenny Murray was downgraded from Woman's Hour and eventually eased out of Woman's Hour? It's in part because she said that while she supported trans rights, she didn't think that trans women were women. I gave a speech at a talk at the University of Hull a couple of years ago. And incredibly, in the Philip Larkin building, there was a proposal to name a lecture theatre, the Murray Lecture Theatre, after Jenny Murray. And the protesters came out in force. And I think they decided not to call the lecture theatre the Jenny Murray Lecture Theatre, even though it was in a building named after Philip Larkin, whose speech crimes, if they were remotely educated, they'd know, were far worse than anything Jenny Murray had ever said. But the fact is, people who say that kind of thing, who say, I think that that trans women aren't women, even if they say in the next breath that they nonetheless defend and would, you know, fight to the death to defend trans rights, attempts to cancel them follow immediately. And they're often quite successful, as we saw this week with the cancellation of this artist at the Royal Academy. Her embroidery is no longer being sold in the Royal Academy gift shop because she said trans women are women. So her livelihood has been jeopardized because of what she said. And had you said that when you were a presenter on Newsnight, your livelihood would have been in jeopardy and the Free Speech Union, Jeremy, would have had to come to your defence.
Well, and doubtless I'd be very grateful for it.
I expect you would.
But these are pipsqueak issues in the overall scheme of things, aren't they?
I think where it becomes a much bigger issue is over things like the government's response to the COVID pandemic. I think we've seen a very sinister development in the culture wars. Until now, the people who are at risk of being cancelled if they challenge the prevailing orthodoxy on campus or in their subject, in their field, were for the most part in the arts, the humanities, the social sciences. What we've seen in the last 15 months is that same cancel culture, that same intellectual intolerance creep into the hard sciences, particularly public health and medicine. And people who've challenged the prevailing orthodoxy, who've challenged the government's response, not just here, but across the world to this pandemic, like the three original signatories of the Great Barrington Declaration, Professors Sunetra Gupta, Martin Kulldorff and Jay Bhattacharya, we've seen really unpleasant, quite sinister attacks on them and their reputations, attempts to smear them, to cast them out of the respectable scientific community they're members of. People who claimed that that the virus may have originated with a lab leak from the Wuhan Institute of Virology have been smeared, demonized, accused of trafficking in misinformation, conspiracy theories. Only very recently has it become acceptable to say that. Until very recently, if you said that on Facebook, you risk being banned from Facebook. Facebook's recently changed its policy on that. YouTube has been energetically censoring anyone who dissents from the official COVID narrative. And I think when cancel culture, when intolerance for dissenting points of view creeps into something as important as this, what it means is that there isn't any proper public scrutiny of these very important decisions affecting the lives of tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people. And that then becomes a real crisis for democracy. So I think you may say that, you know, the absence of free speech when it comes to the debate between gender-critical feminists and trans activists, why does that really matter? Well, it does matter to a lot of people, and a lot of people's livelihoods have been ruined for dissenting from the kind of woke line. But it really matters when it comes to an issue like how to deal with a global emergency, where there really hasn't been a proper debate, even within the media, where you'd expect a debate to take place. I can't think of a proper debate that's taken place on the BBC or even on Channel 4 about the government's response to the pandemic. There's this kind of ludicrous line that if you give a platform to people who are critical of some of the measures our government and other governments have been taking, that will make people less likely to observe social distancing protocols, to wear masks, and that will endanger lives. We've even seen Ofcom weigh into this. Ofcom has issued this very censorious coronavirus guidance, telling Brooke, which I'm sure you would have balked at had you still been at Newsnight or on Channel 4, the guidance essentially saying you have to exercise extreme caution if you're one of our licensees before airing critical views of the response of the public health authorities to this crisis. And that's meant, I'm afraid, that one side in what should be a really important public debate has been pretty much silenced. And that is really serious. That's a crisis in our democracy, I think.
But this is just you looking for a scrap.
It's not. It's not just me looking for a scrap. It's me wanting to hold our government to account and not being able to. Because every time someone like me pops up to challenge the government's response, we're told, there's blood on your hands. Keep quiet. If you're allowed to talk, if you go around saying these things, people are going to stop wearing masks and more people will die. Shut up. And then because of that, we haven't had a proper public debate.
That is a danger. Do you not accept it's a danger?
Well, it's only a danger if you presuppose that the government has got its response to the pandemic right and that lockdowns are actually helpful when it comes to reducing transmission and the collateral damage of lockdown doesn't outweigh the benefits of lockdown. It's sort of presupposing that one side in this debate is right. Only if you take that for granted can you then say that anyone who challenges the COVID orthodoxy is endangering lives. My view is that those promoting the COVID orthodoxy, those supporting lockdowns, they're the ones endangering lives. We need to have a proper public debate.
It's a different debate.
Well, it's a debate we should be having and we aren't having. And we're not having it because cancel culture has crept into, is now extended beyond these fringe issues to affect the fundamental issues which are affecting everyone's life.
What about repealing the Equality Act?
I'm not sure I'd advocate the wholesale repeal of the Equality Act, but I do think it's had a pretty pernicious and, to I think a large extent, unintended impact on free speech. So, for instance, one thing that came up recently, a couple of gender-critical feminists were no-platformed at the University of Essex. The University of Essex has just published a lengthy report about this episode by a barrister who's an expert in equalities law. And one of the reasons these gender-critical feminists were no-platformed is because trans activists and their allies on campus managed to persuade the university that just allowing these professors to speak on campus and to challenge some of the nostrums of the trans militants would be unlawful under the Equality Act, because if you merely challenge the idea that trans women should be able to compete against women in women's only events at the Olympics, like weightlifting, if you challenge that idea, these activists at Essex University said, you are harassing trans people on campus, and that is unlawful under the Equality Act. Now, this barrister said that they'd got the law wrong, but the Equality Act is a bit ambiguous. There is room for it to be interpreted in that way. We saw that at Eton recently. Will Noland, an English teacher, produced a video lecture in which he challenged some of the nostrums of radical feminism, challenged the idea that there's something toxic about masculinity. And he did so in quite a robust, provocative way in this video. A member of staff complained to the head teacher that if she had to discuss the contents of this video with boys in class, that that would constitute harassment and discrimination against her under the Equality Act. And that was taken seriously. And Eton engaged a barrister, and the barrister affirmed that, yes, if they asked a teacher to discuss with boys this video lecture challenging the idea that masculinity is toxic, that they would be in breach of the Equality Act, and the teacher in question would have grounds for a case against them for discrimination in the employment tribunal. So I think the Equality Act does need to be reformed, and it needs to be made clear that it can't be invoked to circumscribe what can be taught in schools, to circumscribe who's allowed to speak at universities in the way it has been. It's been weaponized by the woke left to shut down dissent as a way of trying to win the argument. Instead of engaging in a grown-up debate, it's again like with the Gender Recognition Act, instead of engaging in a robust debate and defending their point of view, they just seek to shut down alternative points of view and claim that just expressing those alternative points of view constitutes harassment and discrimination against people who have protected characteristics. And we have to stop the Equality Act being weaponized in that way, which it is on a daily basis. And the way to do that, I think, is to reform it and make it clear that that was never the intention.
Do you think we need something like the First Amendment in this country?
On balance, I think, yes, that would be helpful. Ultimately, you're still at the mercy of the courts. I mean, the problem is that free speech can never be absolute. It always has to be...
Why not?
Well, you know, you wouldn't defend the free speech of paedophiles. You wouldn't defend the right of someone to cry fire in a crowded theatre. You wouldn't defend the free speech of people who wanted to portray state secrets in a way that endangered lives. So there are always going to have to be... You wouldn't defend, I imagine, people who wanted to incite hatred against racial minorities. So there are always going to have to be some limits to free speech. So judges are always going to be able to exercise some discretion. It's always going to be up to them exactly where the line is drawn. So it doesn't matter how robust free speech protections are in law, though they certainly could be a lot more robust than they are at present, and I think a First Amendment in this country would help. But nonetheless, you're always at the mercy of judges, and you need there to be a culture of free speech. You need the judges to be on side. And one problem we have in this country is that the upper echelons of the judiciary have in part been captured by the woke cult. And when adjudicating between, you know, free speech and some counterbalancing right, like the right to privacy, they tend to side against free speech rather than with it. And I think in the United States, even with the First Amendment, a lot of Supreme Court decisions might have gone the other way had the Supreme Court justices been less sympathetic, less well-disposed towards free speech. You need a culture and a tradition of free speech and lots of institutions standing up for it in order to preserve it, in order for it to thrive. It's not enough to just have something like the First Amendment, though I think it would help.
Toby Young, thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.